Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. It's always a pleasure to have you with us here on Close Up Radio, which is a service of the Telly Award-winning Close Up Television and Radio. Very special guest is political columnist Stephen Jonas. Having grown up in a left-wing household, Stephen has been progressive in his politics and critical of Republicans' administration since he was very young, but nothing had really unnerved him as when Donald Trump descended that golden elevator and announced he would be running for president. He had written his first column on Trump and racism back in 2011 when he was a birther questioning President Obama's legitimacy. Now, in later years, Stephen writes columns devoted to his lifelong interest in politics, primarily as a contributor of opednews.com, buzzflash.com, and reader-supported news.com, writing for Godot, and really an archive of all of Jonas's political columns published since 2004 can be found on his website, which is stephenjonaspolitics.com. His most recent book is The 15% Solution, How the Republican Religious Right Took Control of the United States from 1981 through 2002, a futuristic novel, of course, that is available at Amazon. I actually have a copy that Stephen had sent me, and it really is fascinating and riveting, page-turning and eye-opening reading. Gets you really, really thinking about things in a very deep way. It was originally published in 1996. The book offers warnings about what could happen if the Christian right allied with the Republican Party. Until recently, presidents accepted the norms of how constitutional democracy ought to be conducted, according to Stephen, from the corruption of the Department of Justice to family separation to the violent clearing of peaceful protesters in Lafayette Square and the insurrection on January 6th. Saying, you know, that Trump didn't just break the norms, he abandoned good faith, is, according to Stephen, an American tragedy. Let's welcome him to the show. We have lots of wonderful conversation coming up, eye-opening, and it's going to be really engaging, and we're looking forward to it. So let's welcome him from Eastern Long Island, New York, political columnist Stephen Jonas. Stephen, thank you very much for joining us on Close Up Radio. It's a pleasure to have you here today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jim, and thanks for that very encouraging, very endorsing introduction. Very much appreciated.
Our pleasure. Now, I mentioned earlier that you've had political engagement that goes back for a long time. Tell us about that. When were you first understanding of the political process, and when did you say, you know, I want to be engaged?
Well, actually, it began in childhood. I'm what's known as a red diaper baby. I've made no bones about that, although neither parent was actually a member of the Communist Party. They were very close, and I grew up in a very left-wing household. I remember I was taken down to see President Roosevelt go by in an open car when he was campaigning for the third term in 1940. There was a parade down Broadway in Manhattan near where I lived. I've been in that kind of atmosphere since I was a child. And unlike, you know, there are numbers of other red diaper babies who turned, who became far right, I've remained pretty far left.
So with that, you know, obviously you're from New York and you've been aware of Donald Trump for decades. Did you think back a ways that he had serious political aspirations?
No, I mean, like many of us who live in New York City, we regarded Trump as sort of a joke. You know, that he would appear on Stern's program, You know, he had that television program of his own, reality TV host. His father trained him to be a racist. Many people are familiar with the fact that when Trump was a young man and already coming into the real estate business with his father, his father was sued by the Department of Labor for discrimination in housing in the early 1970s. In the 80s, demanded the execution of the so-called Central Park Five, who had been, as it turned out, wrongly accused of rape, and he would have had them killed. So he was well known as a racist, but I wrote my first column about him in 2011, about birtherism, about his birtherism. And I wrote my first column about Trump and the possibility of fascism on the Trumpian side. And unlike a lot of other people who use the word fascism, I carefully define it, and my definition appears in my regularly in my columns on opednews.com and buzzflash.com. I wrote my first column about Trump and the possibility of his being a fascist in late 2015. The title of the column is it Hair, H-A-I-R, Trump, or Hair, H-E-R-R, Trump?
That's an interesting way to look at it, yeah. Your experience over the last 5 years, obviously, you know, have been following and commented on Trump and the Trumpites closely. Tell us a little bit about some of that.
Well, Trump did not, I think a very important thing for people to understand is that Trump did not introduce racism to the modern Republican Party. Trump has emphasized racism, and he keeps emphasizing it over and over again. But he has emphasized that it is a central part of his approach that anybody who isn't white is automatically suspect, is automatically bad. And whether they're, native-born non-white people or people coming, legal immigrants. Remember how he attacked Muslim citizens in the 2016 campaign. But this goes back, the Republican Party, the first elements of racism in Republican politics appeared when Goldwater was running for president, when he refused, for example, to endorse the creation of a national holiday for Martin Luther King Jr. Certainly, Nixon turned it publicly when he adopted what he called the Southern Strategy, as the Southern white members of Congress started leaving the Democratic Party over the civil rights legislation in the mid-60s. Nixon announced, well, we're going to take them over, and that's what happened. So that it's developed slowly since then. One can pick out certain landmarks. When Ronald Reagan left Philadelphia after the Philadelphia convention, after he got the Republican nomination in 1980, his first campaign stop was coincidentally in Philadelphia, Mississippi, where the three civil rights workers had been murdered in the Freedom Summer of 1964. That was not a coincidence. It's continued, I've written columns about, with much more chapter and verse on this. Until Trump has put it right at the front of his campaigning, and he still does.
So, what was the one thing that happened during the presidency of the? I mean, it's hard to deduce only because there's been so many things. But of the last 4 years that concerned you the most during the presidency? I'm sure the insurrection was one of them, but...
Well, yeah, but, I mean, that wasn't, you know, that was after he had lost the election. I mean, that's an extremely important event in American history, and we'll see what, you know, we'll see what happens as a result of the insurrection. It's not over. That movement is not over, and the people behind it make it clear on the internet that it's not over. They're now talking about an armed assault, I think, in a couple of weeks. You know, the date keeps getting moved when it's predicted and it doesn't happen, and then they move the date. But I think that it's hard to pick out a single negative, and that is that the Trump presidency accomplished nothing other than lowering taxes for the very wealthy, devastating the federal government, Steve Bannon, who was a principal advisor of Trump in the early days, said that what we really want to do is get rid of the federal government and get rid of regulation and get rid of a lot of different kinds of regulation that benefit most of the people in the United States. And federal departments were devastated in terms of policy and in terms of personnel. You see now articles coming out about how as the Biden administration attempts to restart and re-energize the federal government, they find out more and more the damage that was done by Trump. I suppose the main thing was that there wasn't anything other than negative stuff. There was no positive program from Trump. The joke now is he kept talking about Infrastructure Week. There was no infrastructure plan. He talked about ending Obamacare and replacing it with something better. All he wanted to do was end Obamacare. He certainly never came out with a plan to replace it with something better. I remember he was furious with John McCain because John McCain cast the deciding vote preventing the dismantlement of Obamacare, which, by the way, is a very, very limited program affecting about 10% of the population for help with payment for medical and health services.
Really fascinating stuff when you really think about it. A lot of people don't talk much about what happened in Lafayette Square anymore, but because the January 6th was such an escalation in violence, of course, sort of overwhelms our collective memory, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And, Lafayette Square, I mean, if only Lafayette Square had happened, and if the insurrection hadn't happened, then there would be a lot more focus on what Trump wanted to do in terms of suppressing peaceful protest. I saw that live on television. And, and it's funny, I was looking at General Milley, who happened to be in fatigues. And, he was kind of walking along, probably about 10, 15 strides behind the president, to the president's left. And I looked at Milley and I said, man, this man looks as if he just ate a sour onion. He is wondering what the devil he is doing here. And then when Trump got in front of the church, and by the way, the bishop had told him not to come, he got in front of the church, and Ivanka pulled a Bible out of her $1,500 handbag. And then Trump, this very occasionally gets commented on, but I have to say I noticed it right away, and I'm sure lots of other people did too. Trump demonstrated clearly that he knows nothing about the Bible, that he has very rarely had a Bible in his hand. Why? How do we know that? Because he was carrying it upside down and backwards. Did you notice that? The ribbon that you used to put it was hanging down.
Yeah.
It was hanging down, and it was backwards. Usually when you hold a copy of the Bible in your hand, first of all, it's right side up. Second of all, the cover of the Bible is facing the onlooker.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. This guy was using it as a prop. I don't know if he's ever opened the Bible, but he was using it as a prop. But it's your program. I'd like to say something about the relationship between Trump and the Republican Party. But, you know, it's your program, so.
Well, yeah, you're the guest, so feel free to be able to openly express whatever you want. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, you know, there's been a tremendous focus on Trump because he does have an oversized personality. And it's something he's taken advantage of his whole life. But I think what we have to understand is that Trump symbolizes a segment of the Republican Party that is, this thought is hardly original. There are a lot of commentators who say this now. We know that what's happening in this country is demographic change. And forget about immigration immigration is part of it, but it would happen anyway, regardless. I mean, even if the borders were completely closed to outsiders because of birth rates, eventually there are going to be more non-white people in this country than white people. The Republican Party runs on white people, not all white people, to be sure, but it runs on white people, and it runs on the kind of messages that it can deliver to white people. So Trump is a very useful symbol to them. But that segment of the Republican Party, which, by the way, dominates the Congressional Republican Party at this time, is there. And they represent certain interests in the powers that be in terms of running the economy. And, for example, those powers that be that run the economy are going to be very unhappy with the current report from the UN on climate change. And I'm sure in another day or Fox is going to be screaming about it. So Trump symbolizes them. And they would be there whether Trump were there or not. Trump is very useful to them now. But I already see the party moving beyond Trump. The congresswoman from Georgia, Green, she has already gone to Iowa. Well, why would she go to Iowa? Random? I don't think so. Why do politicians go to Iowa 3 years before the next primaries for the presidential nomination? Why do they go there? We know why they go there. There are people who are as Trumpy as Trump or Trumpier. They try to be Trumpier than Trump, like Green does. Did you hear that Green said that anybody who urges somebody else to get vaccinated should be shot? Did you hear that one?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Anyway.
Masks are like the Holocaust.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Didn't know that?
Yeah, I tell you, you learn something new every day.
You learn something new every day. And then you question it. I do. I post a tweet every once in a while under the heading TPJ Magazine. TPJ, the Political Junkies Magazine. And I pointed out that when Greed made that original statement, not only did it illustrate her prejudice, but it also illustrated that she knows absolutely nothing about the Nazis and the Holocaust. that the Gold Star in the early days of Nazi Germany had nothing to do with the Holocaust because they hadn't even thought of it yet. The Holocaust wasn't formalized until almost 10 years later at something called the Wannsee Conference outside of Berlin on January 20th, 1942. But the Holocaust, the Gold Star, the purpose of the Gold Star in starting in 1933 that Jews had to wear on the street was to make them easily identifiable so that Nazi thugs could come up to them and start beating them on the street out in the open, which they did. That was the early purpose of the Gold Star. I mean, this woman knows nothing about, you know, what really happened in Nazi Germany. But the point I'm trying to make here is that for those of us who believe in constitutional democracy, and for those of us who believe in a balanced state that works for all the people who are not currently revolutionaries, but think that we could do a better job in distributing goods and services and financing, a major element of the Republican Party is opposed to that. They are the enemy of that. They have been ever since the New Deal. They're the same people. And so Trump has been very useful to them because he's gotten people to focus around them through the use of racism. But I think Trump will slowly be discarded, that he will be found to be not of that much use because he generates so much animosity, and that they're going to move beyond that to people like Green, like DeSantis, like Abbott. I mean, Abbott's clearly running for president. Abbott, by the way, never mentions Trump anymore, doing his thing entirely on his own. You know, the idiocy of telling schools in Texas that they cannot inform parents that there are one or more children in the school that the children of those parents attend who have COVID. They're prohibited from informing. Now, anyway, let me stop here. I'm just going on and on and on, which I tend to do.
It's really interesting, too, you know, how we, and it can be frustrating, how do we go on as a country with all of this division and the obvious violence we're seeing and the hatred everywhere and all the forces that are incentivized, actually, to keep us divided as opposed to coming to the table, breaking bread, talking things out. You know, not everybody's going to get everything they want, but at least coming to the table and talking things out. It's almost, some would say, driving us towards sort of a fascism in a way. Tell us about that.
Well, a lot. Yes, I mean there are a lot of observers other than myself. You know, I'm one of an increasing number now. I mean, I've talked about Trump and fascism since 2015. There were a few around at the time. There are more and more. I mean, when you see people like Paul Krugman, who, you know, is a liberal leftist, who, you know, writing for the New York Times, uses the word fascism. As I say in my columns, if people want to see how I define it, and I define it very carefully, they can read what I have to say about it. But the one of the principal characteristics of fascism, if you look at the fascist models, there were six countries in the 20th century that provide the models for fascism. One of the major features was that there was always an individual in whom all of the administrative powers were concentrated, that there was no independent legislature and there was no independent judiciary. Pan was a little different. The European powers, Hungary, Italy, Germany, and Spain, all the power was concentrated in one person. Trump has talked about that. That Trump would love to be the person in charge, the dictator, the have concentrated powers. And remember that, you know, one of the reasons that William Barr originally got the job as Attorney General was because he had sent the famous, quote, 19-page letter, unquote, to Trump, which talked about the concentration of power in the hands of the executive branch, which the executive branch being run by the president. Sorry. Hold on a second.
Saved by the bell?
Call you back.
Yeah, either that or it was the ice cream man coming down.
I meant to turn my cell phone off. And
I was going to say, I'll hold if you want to run down and get an ice cream cone or something.
No, that's okay. It's my wonderful banker calling, but I will call him back anyway. It's a minor matter.
especially when the banker calls on a Monday.
Yeah, I don't know why I called him. So anyway. Anyway, just about. I could share this
and that's
with
the thing
our
right there.
Worldwide audience. I could.
You gotta laugh,
it's about
right?
Getting,
you gotta
it,
laugh.
You gotta laugh. It's about getting another bank book. That's what it's about. So.
Yeah. You gotta laugh. I think our society is even forgetting how to laugh. Something is basic. I mean, to balance things out, you gotta laugh. I mean, humor is essential to get through the day. Oftentimes.
Well, you know, I haven't seen it now in about a month. But, you know, Jimmy Kimmel had had the feature, at, you know, a week in the life of COVID from, you know.
Yeah.
So, <you've, laughs> so anyway, but that's what Trump focused on, but there's William Barr, and William Barr represents a significant segment of the economic controlling class, and that's what they want, and it is very dangerous, and we have to keep fighting, and I think that the president is doing very well. I think that there are people to the left of him on policy, including myself, who have to say our number one goal now is to prevent the imposition of fascism in the United States. And we have to have a very broad alliance to do that. And part of it is getting progressive legislation to the extent that it can be progressive through the Congress, and our side is going to have to make some compromises. And, of course, the principal historical example of what happens when you don't do this happened in Germany before the accession of Hitler on January 30th, 1933. There were two major left-wing parties in Germany. There was the Communist Party of Germany, and there was the Socialist Party of Germany. The leadership in the Communist Party, and they had good reasons for doing this, hated the leadership of the Socialist Party. They were also part of the then Communist International, which was run from Moscow, and they were told not to cooperate with the Socialists. In fact,
right.
You know about this.
Yeah, I think we got about 60 seconds left. I want to make sure we get into
so the point is there was no alliance. They might have been, if they had allied, they might have been able to stop Hitler in the German Parliament and the Reichstag. This is what we have to avoid at all costs. We have to work together.
Yeah.
We have to realize that our goal. You mentioned the word fascism. That's what we have to stop.
And if folks want to learn more, there is a website you can go to connect with our very special guest. Stephen Jonas. The website is easy breezy. You just go to StephenJonasPolitics.com, and that is StevenJonasPolitics, StephenJonasPolitics.com. The book is The 15% Solution, How the Republican Religious Right Took Control of the U.S. 1891 through 2022, a futuristic novel, available at Amazon.com as well. Stephen, fascinating conversation, just as I knew it would be. The book is very riveting, and as I said, definitely page-turning. I've read it, and very eye-opening, and appreciate you coming on as a guest, and hopefully we'll get a chance to hear your perspective and welcome you back down the line. It'll be a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Jim, for the very warm welcome, the excellent questions, giving me a chance to go on and on a little bit. And also for the promotion for my website, my views, and my book. And I look forward to our next conversation.
Absolutely, absolutely, sir. And good luck with the banker.
Thank you.
Okay. Take care. Have a good day.
Thank you. Right. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. You got to laugh, folks. You got to laugh. Life can throw anything at you. It's how you respond to it and react to it that matters. Political columnist Stephen Jonas, our guest today on this episode of Close Up Radio. We hope to have him back again. This episode was recorded in its entirety, so even though we're a little past the broadcast time, it is available to hear again, and you can share the links. Again, the website, StephenJonasPolitics.com, and the book is available at Amazon. Thanks for joining us for this episode of Close Up Radio. Appreciate you being with us as well. Hope you have a great day. Thanks for being with us, and we'll be back momentarily with another amazing guest right here on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, take care and be well, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit CloseUpTelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.